Turn to Proverbs 7:18. So the strange woman just got done telling this young man that she'd perfumed her bed with myrrh, aloes, and cinnamon, and now she goes in for the kill. At this point, she's been talking it up. She's been giving him reasons which would entice him, but now she just comes flat out and tells him, all right, let's do it. Verse 18, come, let us take our fill until the morning. Let us solace ourselves with loves. She's skilled at the power of persuasion because she didn't start out with just walking up and said, hey, come to my place, right? She walks up, she makes it look like she's a good woman. She flatters him a bit. She tells him about how nice her place is. And then she, you know, goes in with the direct move. No, she was a lot more skilled than that Potiphar's wife, because Potiphar's wife pretty much just came to Joseph and said, lie with me. I mean, that was the extent of her courtship there. So this woman's laid all the groundwork to seduce the young man. Now, first, she has appealed to his lust of the eyes with her immodest attire. Now, before we, you just keep your finger there in Proverbs chapter 7 and turn over to 1 John 2:16. We're going to see here, here are the three things, the three ways in which a man is enticed. This is how our mother Eve was enticed by the devil. He appealed to these same three things, and this is how the devil or any sinner will try to get into us to make us follow our lusts. 1 John 2 and verse 16 says, for all that is in the world, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life is not of the Father, but is of the world. So I want you to remember those three things. Just keep your finger there, and let's look at how this woman appeals to all three of those things. First of all, the lust of the eyes with her immodest attire. Verse 10, and behold, there met him a woman with the attire of an harlot and subtle of heart. That's appealing to the man's sense of sight. Next, she grabs him, kisses him, and tells him of her finely decorated and perfumed bed, appealing to his lust of the flesh. Verse 13, so she caught him and kissed him, and with an impudent face said unto him, and then down in verses 16 and 17, I've decked my bed with coverings of tapestry, with carved works, with fine linen of Egypt. I've perfumed my bed with myrrh, aloes, and cinnamon. Lust of the flesh. Gives him a kiss, and then appealing to his fleshly desires of smell and, you know, things like that. And then she flatters him, appealing to his pride of life. Verse 15, therefore came I forth to meet thee diligently to seek thy face, and I have found thee. So that would definitely appeal to his pride, because here he is, just, you know, some young man, probably never had a good-looking woman of means ever talk to him before, and all of a sudden she walks up and says, I've been looking for somebody just like you. I finally found you. I am so thankful, the Lord. I just got home from church, and I was praying for a good godly man, and along you walked, and I just ran out and figured I'd come out and talk to you. Appeals to his pride of life. So having thoroughly tantalized his carnal nature and even tried to appeal to his spiritual nature, you remember verse 14, I have peace offerings with me. This day have I paid my vows. She's done all this to weaken his resistance, and now she goes in for the kill. She says, come. Up until now, she's been trying to persuade him. Now she moves from persuading to commanding. Come means, in its most literal sense, it expresses the hitherward motion of a voluntary agent to move towards, approach. In other words, come in, come towards me, come to my house. Now, it's interesting that in Proverbs chapter 9 and verse 5, wisdom here, personified as a woman, bids men to come unto her. Proverbs 9:5, come, eat of my bread, and drink of the wine which I have mingled. The strange woman does the same thing, right? See, she mimics the wisdom, the personification of wisdom here, the godly woman who bids men to come to into the church and partake of the Lord's Supper, in other words, bread and wine. And we'll talk about that when we get there here in a while. She likewise bids him to come. Let us take our fill of love. She invites the young man to come into her house and get all the quote-unquote love that he wants, because she said, take our fill of love. Fill is a full supply of drink or food, enough to satisfy want or desire. Now she is perverting the meanings of words here, because she says, come, let us take our fill of love. What she's referring to by love is not love, right? She's referring to lust. That's what fornication and whoredom is. It's lust, not love. Look at Romans 1 and verse 24. There's a lot of fools out there that claim to love each other, love his girlfriend or love her boyfriend, and they're doing nothing of the sort. They are committing sin, and that is not an act of love. Romans 1 and verse 24, wherefore God also gave them up to uncleanness through the lusts of their own hearts to dishonor their own bodies between themselves. These are people that rejected God first of all, worshiped the creature more than the creator, and then God gave them up to all these various things. He first gave them up to false worship, then he gives them up to fornication, then he gives them up to sodomy. And notice there, it's called lust. The uncleanness through the lust of their own hearts to dishonor their bodies between themselves. And also look in 1 Thessalonians 4, 3 through 7. Paul says, for this is the will of God, even your sanctification, that ye should abstain from fornication, that's sex outside of marriage, that every one of you should know how to possess his vessel, that is his body, in sanctification and honor, not in the lust, so there you go, fornication is lust, not love, not in the lust of concupiscence, even as the Gentiles which know not God, that no man go beyond and defraud his brother in any matter, because that the Lord is the avenger of all such, as we also have forewarned you and testified, for God hath not called us unto uncleanness, but unto holiness. So when she says, let's take our fill of love, she's using the wrong word. Let us take our fill of lust is what she really should have said. Because love is the keeping of God's commandments toward God and toward our neighbor. If you want to know if you love somebody, see if you keep God's commandments. If you keep God's commandments, you love God. And if you keep God's commandments towards other people, you love them. And some of those commandments are rebuking your neighbor and correcting people and hard things that don't feel like love. Spanking your children, right? That's an act of love. He that spareth his rod hateth his son. He that loveth him chasteneth him betimes. So sometimes the things that we think feel like love are actually not love. And the things that don't feel like love are love. If you're doing what God says towards somebody, you love them, whether it feels like an act of love or not. 2 John 1 and verse 6. He says, and this is love, that we walk not, or that we walk after his commandments. This is the commandment that ye have heard from the beginning. This is the commandment that, as ye have heard from the beginning, ye should walk in it. So this is love, that we walk after his commandments. He just defines what love is, walking in God's commandments. That's true love. And then just go back a page to 1 John 5, 2 through 3. It says, by this we know that we love the children of God when we love God and keep his commandments. Right there you go. How do you know you love God's children? When you keep God's commandments. So you may have never told somebody in this church that I love you, but if you keep God's commandments in general, toward God, toward them, you do love that person. Because that's how we know that we love the children of God, when we love God and keep his commandments.
And speaking of love, you have 1 Corinthians 13 that talks about what charity, love, is.
Yes, that's right. Which is being patient and kind and keeping God's, rejoicing in the truth, mm-hmm. rejoicing not in iniquity, believeth all things, right? All those things are acts of love. Fornicators do not love each other. They merely lust after each other. And now it goes from the sublime to the ridiculous. Come, let us take our fill of love until the morning. she entices him with exaggerated promises. Until the morning. Until means with reference, when we're referring to reference to time, it means onward till a time specified or indicated, up to the time of an action, occurrence, etc. So she is suggesting that they can take their fill of, quote, love, unquote, from the evening. Remember, she met him in the evening, in the morning, in the black and dark night. From the evening up until the time of the morning. Okay, only in movies and romance novels do people make love all night long. That is the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard of.
I've heard someone do it, like, for 3 days.
Well, it's like some freak of nature or something. That's crazy.
Because they have been apart for a long time. So it took them 3 days.
I don't know, that sounds like folklore to me.
3 days.
Yeah, I believe it when I see it.
Why would you want to see
it? I don't want to see it.
Poor choice of words.
Yeah, right. Only an inexperienced fool would be excited by such a ridiculous proposition, making love all night long. In the real world, men fall asleep after sex and don't wake up for a long time. And I have Bible for this. Song of Solomon 2, 3 through 7.
Do we need Bible?
No, but, you know, we prove all things. Hold fast to that which is good. Song of Solomon 2, 3 through 7. As the apple tree among the trees of the wood, so is my beloved among the sons. I sat down under his shadow with great delight, and his fruit was sweet to my taste. I'm not going to expound that. You can just think on that and figure it out for yourself. He brought me to the banqueting house, and his banner over me was love. Stay me with flagons, comfort me with apples, for I am sick of love. So she's lovesick. His left hand is under my head, and his right hand doth embrace me. You can probably figure out what's going on there. I charge you, O ye daughters of Jerusalem, by the rose and by the hinds of the field, that ye stir not up nor awake my love till he please. So this is referring to lovemaking here. And how does it end? He's sleeping, and don't wake him up until he's ready to get up. It's going to be a while. Now look at chapter 3, 4 through 5. Says, it was but a little that I passed from them, but I found him whom my soul loveth. I held him and would not let him go until I had brought him into my mother's house and into the chamber of her that conceived me. I charge you, O daughters of Jerusalem, by the rose and by the hinds of the field, that ye stir not up nor awake my love till he please. So there's the mouth of two witnesses. So by this point, the young fool is too excited to be thinking rationally, though. He just thinks, oh, take our fill of love until the morning. That sounds amazing to me. You can tell he's inexperienced. Because any man that wasn't would say, give me a break. And that's absurd. And then she says, let us solace ourselves with loves. To solace means to cheer, comfort, console, to entertain, or recreate. So here the strange woman shows her cards with this comment, because she says, let us solace ourselves with love, and solace means, at least in part, to entertain or recreate. So this is not exactly love going on here, right? Her enticement of him is for the purpose of entertainment and recreation, not for true marital love and intimacy. This is a deception, because fornication will only afford fleeting joy, afterwards to be followed by shame, disappointment, regret, disease, poverty, and more. Could even be death. Let's just look at a few verses that we've already been over. Proverbs 5, 8 through 14. Proverbs 5, 8 through 14. We heard how the adulteress makes things sound like they'll turn out. Now let's see how they actually will turn out. Proverbs 5, 8 through 14. Remove thy way far from her, and come not nigh the door of her house, lest thou give thine honor unto others, and thy years unto the cruel, lest strangers be filled with thy wealth, and thy labors be in the house of a stranger. And thou mourn at the last when thy flesh and thy body are consumed, and say, how have I hated instruction, and my heart despised reproof, and and have not obeyed the voice of my teachers, nor inclined mine ear to them that instructed me. I was almost in all evil in the midst of the congregation and assembly." So there you have the man that goes into the strange woman, and he loses his honor, he loses his wealth, he loses his health, his marriage, if he had one prior to that. He loses a lot. Could even lose his life. Let's look in verses 20 through 21 of chapter 6. He says, "My son, keep thy father's commandment and forsake not the law of thy mother. Bind them continually upon thine heart, tie them about thy neck." I wanted Romans chapter 6. I knew that didn't look right. Romans chapter 6. All I saw. Yes, that is good advice. I just saw 6:20 and jetted over there. Romans chapter 6. Verses 20 through 21. "For when ye were the servants of sin, ye were free from righteousness." Right, there's your free will. Free from righteousness. "What fruit had ye then in those things whereof ye are now ashamed? For the end of those things is death." Yes, the fruit of sin is being ashamed and ultimately ends up in death. The wages of sin is death.
So you should be ashamed of your former sins.
Yes.
And not brag about them.
Right, exactly,
let's
yes.
Say you don't brag about getting drunk when
right.
you were younger.
Right, exactly. I that just really grates on me. I hate that when people do that.
When people do what, say that again.
Oh, just talk and boast about when they used to get drunk when they were younger and
yeah,
things like that. And
yeah.
Boasting about sin instead of being ashamed of it. Mm-hmm. Okay, so that takes care of verse 18. Just a quick note at the end of the sermon. The most important thing a believer in Jesus Christ can do is to be a member of one of God's true churches. If you're not already a member of one, go to pastorwagner.com/churches to see if there is a true church or other believers of like faith near you. That's pastorwagner.com/churches.